All right, welcome back, everyone. We don't know how much we're going to go, but me and Jason are going to continue. Sherry had just tons of school work, and I think she's probably even going to go to work. I don't know, but she had to leave. I know this is Barry's slot, and we do need to try to push the donate button whenever we can. Whoever's on air, doesn't matter. So if you do like what we're doing, hit that donate button. So welcome back, Jason. Welcome back.
What's that?
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yes, absolutely. So what did you think about the discussion we just had?
Well, you know, I think the medical industry for a long, long time, they've been deceiving people both psychologically and physically. You know, what they might call schizophrenia could be some sort of extra mental power.
That's true. Yeah.
As I mentioned in a lot of movies in the last 100+ years, you know, they've been going after these superpower people or whatever they want to call these superheroes. They've been trying to kill them. They've been trying to study them. They try to hold them back. I actually wonder why they even come out with these things. I mean, sure, people enjoy fantasy, but, you know, some of these things go to a wild extreme.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of which ones you think go to an extreme?
Yes, there's a TV show. I know it had at least 2 seasons. I don't know if it's been brought back for a third now, and I need to Google the name of it, but the whole premise of the show is about this one guy that has extraordinary mental capabilities, and he's able to control the physical and the non-physical around him with his mind.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll have to search it up and get the name.
You're not talking about Kilgrave, are you?
No.
Okay. All right. No, there's a show, what is it, Sarah Jones or something? Jessica Jones. And he's the bad guy. That's not the one you're talking about?
No, I don't even know that show. No.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I actually agree with that a lot, because I actually think that, you know, in my opinion, when people are diagnosed schizophrenic, I think first off, it's a lot of BS half the time, because they're psychiatrists. You know, they walk in there for a minute, they give a diagnosis, and that's all there is to it. You know, they're not the psychologists who give you a little bit more time and effort. They're psychiatrists, and they just come in there. Oftentimes, they're overbooked on treatments. They're overglorified, and they get, the patient gets 10 minutes at most, and then poof, you're diagnosed. And what if they just had a very traumatic time that was limited and exclusive? You know, all of a sudden they're a schizophrenic. They take medication, it makes them worse, and that's not good.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I just think there's so much stuff going on where, I mean, I agree with you, because I think that the whole thing about the positive side is there is a lot of people who are manifesting these greater capacities, these greater strengths. And I think it's like you guys are saying, it's more common. There's an evolutionary time going on right now. And we talked about that in culture, and you just referenced it again, the past 100 years in movies. And, you know, some of these movies are pretty twisted, I agree. Yeah. So what do we do then when we have the strength coming and we can do whatever we want with it? Some people use it for bad. Some people use it for good. Some people are puppets. So what do you think about, you know, the difference between those who are working for good, who's working for bad, you know?
Well, you know, that's going to be a catch-22.
Exactly.
The X-Men movies with, you know, Wolverine and Professor Xavier and all them characters and stuff like that. That entire group of people are trying to enlighten the rest of the world on to what their abilities are.
Right. Do you really think that there's actually some truth to this enlightening for our real life world, that there's people attempting to make sure that we do understand our soul qualities and abilities?
That's a good possibility. I mean, Hollywood is the disclosure network, basically.
Yeah, right. It's like politics, I think, in my own opinion. I have seen through documentaries, you know, a lot of people who are, you know, not firsthand, but documentaries, you know, while politics can be very corrupt here in America, I've seen a lot of people who actually do their best efforts as in their political, you know, status to enlighten the people, enlighten their fellow pure politicians, and bring some kind of cooperation amongst one another instead of, you know, always arguing and fighting so nobody gets their way. And I think that maybe in Hollywood, because I heard, you know, I heard both stories. We talked about this last time, me and Sherry, and, you know, it was a whole thing about everyone gets, you know, I have friends of two different extremes. I've heard it, you know, from personal friends of mine, and I couldn't believe one guy's video. He was a friend of mine back in the day. We lost contact since, but he said one of his live videos was, y'all are foolish. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, you know, his gist was, you're all foolish for believing in Illuminati. These people made it because of their own success, their own abilities. And I'm thinking, man, you're talking about right. stuff you have no idea about, you know.
Right.
Sure, there are people who actually did it because of success. Okay, that's a given. But their own talents. But, you know, I've got friends who went through Hollywood. And, yeah, if you didn't do sexual favors, if you didn't do...
The casting couch.
What's that?
The casting couch.
Yeah, the casting couch, yes. And, I mean, I've encountered friends who, like, you know, relative friends who were... Yeah, they had to do this weird dogmatic cultish stuff too. Like, if you're going to join in our crew, we want you to, you know, cut your thumb, bleed on an altar. I've heard stories like that as well. So, you know, it's creepy. It's really creepy. But I do believe that some of the people out there are aware, and we've seen them make their quotes legitimately. There's YouTube videos and stuff like that where the person actually speaks on their own behalf. And they do not support the negative side of the industry of filmmaking. So, you know, there's definitely good guys and bad guys on both sides of everything, you know. I'm a firm believer that there is a revolution going on in the ethers, as Sherry had said. And these ethers are very important because it's the matter behind all things. I enjoy speaking with you because you have a very rigorous political experience. And I think it's oftentimes undermined. I don't think that you speak as much wisdom as you have. I think there's a lot more you could say. And I know you interject politely, and so there's no put down there. But you know, there's a lot going on in your head, buddy. You know, that's good and positive.
I try to whenever I can, but my mind races around, and I have trouble keeping on one different subject.
That's why I keep getting so embarrassed every time I lose my train of thought. I'm like, I feel so foolish, you know, because I'm thinking of six things at the same time. And, you know, again, I haven't been that healthy with my eating diets and stuff like that and the schizophrenia. But, like, again, going back to all of that, I know that I'm just not living a lifestyle conducive to my health. So it only instigates the problems of my lack of concentration, et cetera, et cetera. But I know that I could heal myself if I put the practice in. And I love that the most because they say, you know, yeah, you can just keep on making self-promises and promises to other people, but you're going to keep on disappointing yourself and others if you're not sincere, because the real change depends on sincerity. And if you're not willing to sacrifice because you love something more than the problem, you're not going to change. And
well, you know, the problem with me is most everybody that you will see on the TV screen, basically, mm-hmm. they are trained. They are trained just to look at the camera and read what's on their teleprompter. They
don't. Right, right.
They are training people now to just have opinions. There is no news anymore. We just have opinion pieces. Whether it's – doesn't matter what news agency it is. They're just opinion pieces.
I saw a video – I think you posted that video actually where there was dozens and dozens of networks saying the exact same thing.
Yep.
You posted that, yes.
Well, I don't know if I've ever told you this or whether you've been on the show with me or Sherry or whatever when I have said this, but – I knew a guy about a dozen years ago or so, at least 10 or 12 years ago. He was a producer at a local CBS affiliate in my area here, and he worked out at the same gym. He basically, in so many words, told me that after they get done with their local news, whether it's like 7 o'clock, I think, the big boys come on, you know, the CBS, NBC, ABC, they run the national news. Well, they don't turn the stream over to the national boys, the big boys. they get a digital package of what the national news is, and they just hit the button, and it plays right on the network.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Interesting.
So what you're seeing after the local news is already prepackaged and made and given to them. It's not live.
Really?
That's right.
No, that scares me as a schizophrenic, because I've been able to see things that other people can't, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I can read the thoughts sometimes. Half the time it's just my imagination, I admit that. But when I actually am able to read in between the lines, to know it's prepackaged is scary. It's very scary, because how am I able to read? And again, it's just normal, you know, intuitive stuff. But and that's why you have to be very careful, ladies and gentlemen. And this is very sincere, you know. I've had a numerous amount of friends who actually started to become more perceptive to intuitive forces and reading things. And at first, it can be a roller coaster ride of gaining, you know, getting the helm and knowing how to master it and how to write it out. But you're going to start reading things, and if your paranoia takes any effect, you will read into a bunch of BS and just make things worse. But the truth is out there, and there is a lot of corruption. And but that's what scares me. It's like, you know, when I read these things, you're telling me they're pre-recorded sometimes more than I know. And I'm thinking,
everything's pre-recorded. You know, after the news on your local affiliate, they start running TV shows, comedies or dramas or whatever.
Right.
That's all given to them too, and they just pop it right into the system and punch the button.
You know, it's funny when they talk about the subliminal messages and stuff like that. Uh-huh. You know, what is it? What is the show? What is it? Do you know the channel with Special Victims Unit? There's the station itself.
Not really.
I don't either, but I heard it the other day. But they had a thing where someone out there can chime in and tell me what it is. But I remember hearing their slogan for their station, and it was positively entertaining. And I'm thinking, all your shows are dramas. What a catch, you know. You know, they're all catches.
Well, yeah. Look at CNN. Their little catchphrase is the most trusted news agency. There, the most trusted news agency. Fox News has fair and balanced. You know.
Wow.
This other station, they have their little catchphrase. I don't know what the rest of them are. I just brought up two examples, but
right. So, what do you think then? I want your honest opinion without intruding too much. What is your future perspective for this country here in America, without getting too down the rabbit hole? What do you think is the near future, and is it positive or is it negative? What do you think? Neutral? Anything?
Well, I can tell you my perspective, and then I can tell you a dream I had a couple of years back too.
Oh, great! Awesome! Awesome.
I just see this puppet, Donald Trump, as just nothing but a puppet, just like all the rest.
Okay.
Yeah. I see this political system as you're being fed what they want you to know. They want this message of freedom to get out there. They want this message of hope to get out there that, you know, government is going to save you. Because government is, yeah, sure, for 240 years, government has been a problem, but now government's going to save you. And it's just,
yeah.
I don't see the people that are in control relinquishing their control.
Okay. I have a lot of agreement with you on that. Again, I have different perspectives. Not different perspectives, but my thing is this, is I see the same thing you just said. I just see that there's going to be some kind of maneuver of positive force to try to change it. Whether it's successful or not, I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of corruption going on, and there's a lot of unfit behavior, and they're still masterminding as best they can.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So your dream.
Oh, yeah, this dream. Well, it didn't actually last very long as far as the dream goes, maybe like 30 seconds or something like that. It didn't really, I mean, the only thing I can tell you is I'm standing out in this field, and there's other people. Might have been a park or something like that, and I'm just talking to a man. Don't even know the man, really, but all of a sudden from out of the sky comes a alien invasion. But there's also human forces along with this alien invasion.
Okay.
And they just start blowing people away. And most of the people that are running away are the ones getting targeted first. And for some reason, I don't start running right away. And me and this other guy are just kind of standing there for a few seconds, 10 or 15 seconds, just watching people get blown away. And finally, we do start running and jump down this little ravine type thing. And that's the end of it.
Wow, that's profound. Now, do you have any type of interpretation?
No, I don't really know how to do that kind of stuff, actually.
That's okay. You know, I would interpret it this way. There's two ways that dreams typically work. It's either telling you what you feel or think, whether it's yourself or some other person or a collective. Uh-huh. They're just feelings getting expressed in dreams. Or it really is a intuitive thing where it tells you a probability, not a fact, not a prophecy, but a probability. So sometimes probability is slim to none. Sometimes it's higher stakes. Sometimes it is prophetic. There are prophetic dreams. They do exist. So to me, I think it's a mixture of both your concern, neutrally, and then I think there's some truth to it. And I think that there is, because if there's ever going to be, as you know, very well as you know, if there's ever going to be a revolution, there's going to also be the resistance of the bad entities. And just the system, there's not good and bad. It's just like people who just want to play the system naively will fight against the progress. And even people who are bad will fight for the resistance of good, you know, to win. And they'll just, you know, they'll incidentally be on board and they might become traitors later on. But no, I think I agree with that, because the dream to me signifies that there will be some, as you mentioned, exponentially advanced individuals, whether they're extraterrestrials, natives of this earth, people of this country, that country, there will be this thing through the sky that will happen, in which case there will be fire, there'll be war. And I think that there will be terror, but I think that that's just the beginning. Because I think there's a fear thing there, not a fear of weakness, but a fear of concern, of respect, because nobody wants to see anybody injured. You know, nobody in the right mind wants to see problems. So I think what it is that you're concerned that this might happen in a negative way. And this is a dream saying there's a good chance it might happen. And if it does, you know, buckle your shoes or your belt or whatever, but you know, strap up, because, you know, there's going to be some time to be protective, you know, to play the game, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my thoughts are is that, you know, I know for sure, for a fact, you know, because I've seen the prophecies of all different cultures. There's no Christian, there's no Muslim, there's no Wiccan. There's just that source, you know, and not all of us are religious per se, but I believe in a collective consciousness. One of my favorite things is a spiritual apologist. Apologist is someone who, for those listening, an apologist is someone who actually tries to justify a worldview opposed to the contrary of other worldviews. So without becoming dogmatic for this religion or that religion, I have one stake in being a spiritual apologist. That means not to prove a religion over one over the other, but that there is a spiritual thread of consciousness. Some people then, as atheists or agnostics, will say, I don't believe in spirituality. That's fine. You don't have to believe in spirituality. There's different quantum physics theories and evidences that are being proven more and more by the day that we have a collective consciousness. It does not prove per se that there is a spiritual phenomenon governing the world or the universe, but some people would say there is. Regardless of that fact, there is a collective consciousness that's being proven more and more by the day by professional top league scientists. So my thing is this, is that I think that there is an attunement of people becoming aware that there is a revolution coming. I do not propose you know, any kind of violence, but, you know, if violence does happen, it's unfortunate. But I do propose and I do propagate that people have resolutions of peace, and I do foresee this coming, that there's going to be a challenge to those in status quo, because people are going to become more enlightened, more frustrated. And it's the same pattern over and over again, right, Stephen? Because it's the let them eat cake catastrophe for the queen, where it's like, you know, yeah, starve the people and then, you know, have your fancy doodahs, and all of a sudden the people revolt. And, you know, that revolt's coming. And I pray that it's going to be positive and not negative, because you know, what's coming is something where people are going to become startling aware of just how much, you know, negative politics, we'll say, corruption, pure selfishness, and people are going to be disappointed. They're not going to be happy about it. And I believe that dream is relative, because I'm a dream studier and, you know, I'm studious to dreams. And the thing is that, you know, people have been having the same thematic dreams across the world, country to country. And I'm startled to find out just how much we're all dreaming the same things in different levels.
Yeah.
Minus the average dream, you know.
I've been searching the last 10 minutes for that show, and I finally found it.
Yes. All right, what is it?
It's called Legion.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I never saw that one, but I'm familiar with the concept, and that has to do with Lucifer being on the earth, or?
No. The main character has great psychic abilities.
Oh, I got to watch it, man. I was totally wrong. I thought it was about something else, okay? But I know it's on Netflix, isn't it?
I
think it's on Netflix.
You should be able to get it on Netflix.
Yeah. So this guy has supreme powers, and is he challenged by the state, or what's going on?
Challenged by he's sought after by corporations and the government, and this other group of people that has powers also bring him in, kind of just like the X-Men type of scenarios. But
wow, very cool. Yeah, it is intimidating to me, because sometimes it's more than I can handle, you know, because with my condition, I can channel it too much to where I have to back off very fast. Uh-huh. And it's been said that, you know, once you open the gate, you know, if you're not ready for it, you better shut it pretty quickly. And that's the thing. That's the story I was going into with Sherry. I was trying to, you know, I was telling her that, there it is. I was telling her that, you know, I was channeling information about fixing the economy, and I didn't realize that people were listening in my thoughts. And then what happened was, is that the moment I brought up corruption, the whole system in my head crashed, because it was like, you're either in danger, no one believes it, or it would cause too much conflict between different arenas. And I was happy. I mean, I was pretty upset, because I wanted to know the answer. I was channeling, it wasn't me. I wanted to know the answer. I was like, okay, so I just channeled all this economic growth and sufficiency and change for the better, because America is still great. It's just people are corrupt and it's going down the garbage chute. And, you know, America is still, I don't care about the best of the world. I mean, we're all equally valid for our potential worldwide. But, you know, the economy here, in terms of resources and sources and recycling and all this type of stuff, and green energy and healthy food and healthy culture, we still have an overwhelming infinite abundance here in America. So I'm channeling this information, and all of a sudden I pick up on the same old thing. I didn't know what was going on, but it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't until the moment that I brought up the corruption of society, of the Illuminati kind of stuff, the cabal, that all of a sudden everything went short, and I saw people disappear from my mind. And I thought to myself, wow, if I'm that strong and that aware, I mean, I wasn't aware at all, but if I'm that strong and perceptive when it does happen, imagine all the people out there who do it all the time. And they're not aware that they're doing it, but it's there.
Uh-huh.
But, and it's subconscious. It's subconscious for most people. But it's like, you know, like Cher was talking about, the monkey thing. It's called the 100th monkey principle. And, you know, you're familiar with that.
The 100 monkeys, yes.
Yeah.
You could put 100 monkeys in front of 100 typewriters, and they could eventually, over time, they would type out, like, the novel War and Peace or something like that.
Right, yeah. And it comes from so for those listening, it comes from a real experiment.
Certainly.
Right?
Yeah.
And what happened was, there was one monkey on an isolated island, there was a bunch of monkeys on an isolated island, so they had no contact.
Yes.
With another island. There's two islands. And so one monkey started to do this thing where I think he started to use a coconut or something for a sipping cup. Instead of just using his hands, he used a coconut or something like that. I'm going to butcher the story a little bit, but he started using some kind of mechanism to drink with a cup.
Uh-huh.
And all the monkeys started to do it on the island. So immediately within a matter of a short period of time, all the monkeys on the opposite island did the same thing. And this was an impossible length for them to swim from island to island. Well, right?
There's also been scientifically documented proof where, let's just pick any kind of a animal for an example. I don't remember what the actual case was, but let's just say monkey again. There was a group of monkeys that were on one island and a group of monkeys on another island, just hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of miles away. And, wow. This one group happened to get a hold of some sort of a fruit or a plant or something and tried eating it, and they got sick and died. And the other group of monkeys on the other island had never come in contact with this plant, but when they finally did, they knew not to eat it.
Wow. See, that's amazing, you know, because that's more quantum physics proving this grid around the globe. And like Sherry said, the sun, this is one solar system in our galaxy, let alone the whole universe. And so the relativity of a collective consciousness, it radiates a grid of Earth energy to communicate subconsciously, but it's like emanating from the sun, other planets, but we are native to Earth. We're Earth natives, and there might be other, you know, breeds amongst us, but at the same time, there is a great deal of, you know, there's more and more actual science proving these collective consciousnesses.
Right.
So, right. You know, to me...
I also don't know if you've been on Skype with me or in a show or anything when I've told Sherry and I've told the listeners quite a few times. It doesn't happen anymore, but you're old enough to remember the phones used to be on the walls with a line. connected to a jack, right?
And you God. Yes.
Well, the old house phone line is what, I mean, that's why it's called a phone line, is because they had a line. But three times in my past, like I said, it has happened like 25 years because we've had wireless phones for that long. But I've thought about calling somebody three times and went to the phone and picked it up, and they were on the other end of the line. The phone didn't ring at all. They were there.
Oh, wow. You know what's funny about that? See, now we're talking collective consciousness, right? So that's cool. That's why I think Sherry could have brought more into it than just the war. And again, I respect the fact that she's very adamant about, the abusers and trying to correct the system. And yet she talks about how it's all supposed to balance itself out and it's karma. But at the same time, she's talking about fighting the good fight. So,
right.
You know, that's something to address later on. But so again, about that, that's amazing with the phone call thing. This only happened twice to my memory. And there's a third time where I forget the circumstance and how close it was. I would think a sentence, turn on the TV, and it'd say the exact thing verbatim that I said. But you know, you think, okay, well, there's predictability to that. If we have more average figures of speech, like, well, I'm hungry. If you say, oh, I could eat a horse, that's a common figure of speech.
Right.
So, but the fact that you even turn on the TV and you think to yourself, man, I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse. Turn on the TV, the character says, I could eat a horse. You know, that's still pretty far out there for odds. I mean, the odds of that happening are insane.
Your mind. Yeah, blowing your mind. Say, Jason, why don't we take about another 5-minute break? I need to, my dinner's ready, and I'm going to go get a plate and bring it back here, and we can continue in about 5 minutes.
Okay, sounds good. And then we're going to wrap it up in 20 minutes then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
About
great.
15 after we come back, so yeah.
Cool. All right,
welcome back here for about the last 15 minutes or so of this interesting discussion. I'm glad to have Jason back. So welcome back again, Jason.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. It's good to be back, Stephen. Whole lot of stuff going on. We talked about schizophrenia. We talked about the different types of MK Ultra, controls of the masses between forces of dark. Talk about the yin and yang of light and dark working together. I love that one because that's a oneness factor.
Well, I also wanted to explain also, I don't know if you knew it, but I do have a degree in journalism.
Oh, really?
Yes, I do. I have an
associate's. I think I heard that before, but yeah, go ahead.
I have an associate's degree, and I started in the BA program, but I got through about the first quarter of it, and I decided to drop out and start to do something with my education.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but
so is this recent or what's? No, I mean, you dropped me out.
I dropped out in 2011, so it's been a long time. But I was well on my way to becoming. Well, I am a journalist. You know, I do have the paper that tells me I'm a journalist. But
sure.
One of the things I was taught. I had already not believed the story of 9/11, 2001, September 11th. I was already not believing any of that. But what fortified it for me was in newspaper journalism, people that write articles, put them in newspapers, or write stories, whatever the case is, what they have to do is just take a local interest story. Somebody does something at a local level, and they are in the paper. It still takes a lot of legwork, a lot of writing, a lot of research to get that article in the paper, whether it's even just a small article, you know. It still takes days and days and days, if not weeks, of research and all this, editing, writing, all that takes weeks. What really gets me is a lot of stories nowadays are also prepackaged and given to newspapers, and they all have the same mantra, whether it's a left-wing slant or a right-wing slant. It's all prepackaged also. Look at the story on September 12th, the next day after the September 11th attacks. Every single newspaper almost had the same story, and all they did was they just hit the enter button on their computer keyboard, and it spit out and was printed on the newspapers. Nobody had to do any research. Nobody had to do anything. It was all given to them. And there's been lots of stories also that even go back to the Kennedy assassination, November 22nd, 1963. The next day, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of newspapers had the story, and it was all pre-written out for them.
Now, when you say stuff like that, and I'm just playing that devil's advocate again, is it because they all, I mean, obviously it's impossible for them all to have the same thing to say verbatim, right? So I'm just wondering, are they copying each other because it's just easier sometimes, or is it always, you think?
I believe they're giving memos on the...
I believe nowadays they're definitely doing it. The evidence I saw from the video that you reposted from some, you know, whoever created that video, and you were, you know, awesome enough to put that on your wall, I thought that was amazing because it showed just how startling it is.
Yeah.
And, well, you know...
I think they're giving memos, and I think they're giving generalized points to what they can discuss and what they're not able or what they're not allowed to discuss, and then they can expand their own after that.
Yeah, that's the thing. They got their bosses they have to answer to, and their bosses have bosses, right? So it goes up the, you know, chain of command. And next thing you know, it goes all the way up to whoever's, you know, the mastermind of, you know, these network agencies.
You do know, or maybe you do, maybe you don't, but do you know that professors are not allowed to question? They're not allowed to question their superiors anymore. They're not allowed to question science. I've had seven professors on the show. Six of them were PhDs, and each and every one of them told me the same thing. Academia that entertains or looks into conspiracy, they lose their government funding, and they lose their jobs.
Wow. Professors. I have no doubt about that. I think that's the danger. See, that's why I go into free will more than anything else, because I could care less. Going back to the yin and yang concept I mentioned to Sherry earlier, and these are all valid questions or theories or hypotheses that people question. And I believe that the universe is naturally benevolent in the yin and yang principle, that malevolence has a chance because it's the free will collective of people growing into their own free choice, but the universe will wipe that slate clean and go back to benevolence with consequences to those who did not choose to abide by,
you know.
Incidentally, there's more grace than anything else, but I mean, like, you know.
Sherry said earlier that she was raised as the do no harm thing.
Right, yes.
I've heard many, many people say all over the world that morals are subjective.
Right. I love those discussions. Those are the funnest, the most controversial, funnest discussions you can have.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know, if you really want to look at both sides, well, let's take young females at the age of 12. They are almost, if not today, they are at the age breeding age at 12 and 13. Right. You know, there are still customs and societies today that marry off their 12 and 13 year old girls, or they are, they are given a endowment by an older man for their young girl and married off. And that's been going on actually probably since, well, the last 6,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And including younger, unfortunately, younger ladies too. Some are gentlemen, some are not. I mean, culture. See, I have a lot of different points of reference because I honestly give every religion a benefit of the doubt, and it's complicated. I really do think it's complicated, and I can go into a lot of that stuff that takes hours and hours of discussion and debate. But like, okay, so let's use that. It has nothing to do with religion, but so the thing is, it's culture. And if you upset the culture, you'll be lynched, right? This has been going on for 6,000 years, right? So it's like, okay, well, thank goodness for the gentleman who fell into a relationship by whatever political maneuver, and they didn't touch the woman. No one wants to be married against their will, and then sometimes it does work out where they do want to be married, you know, for whatever prestige or protection. But if it's a little girl, yeah, that's playing with fire, because are you going to consummate a prepubescent child? That's rape. That's horrific. And then it happens all the time. It does happen all the time.
Yes, it does.
But then you have a gentleman, despite the political circumstances, because you get your head cut off just as fast, you know, if you object as a male, you know, in a lot of these circles. So they'll wait until the woman is of maturity. And that includes, you know, and back in the day, it was considered 16, 15, you know.
Yeah.
But once you hit puberty, you hit puberty. When she, you know, does, you know, once she's pubescent, then she's pubescent. It could be 12, 13, 14, 15. But the thing is that, you know, a lot of these guys would wait until 18, 20 years old, usually 16, you know, but, you know, it's a messed up story. It really is.
The reason I wanted to bring up the morals are subjective subject is because look at all over the world today and certain societies, you know, Americans and a lot of Europeans love cats and dogs, just love them as pets and think of them as family. But there are some Middle Eastern countries where cats and dogs are used as food.
Right.
Grown as food.
And skinned alive, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the subjectivity of morals. We've talked about this before, you and I and the panelists who are on the show.
Have we?
Yeah, we have. It was some of our first shows together. And I remember Gary was there.
Okay.
There was Sherry, of course. There was yourself, and then there was another female who I can't remember her name.
Rhonda?
Not Rhonda. It was a blonde, I
Amanda.
Believe. Who?
Amanda.
Amanda. It was Amanda. And we talked about, me and Gary got into it. It wasn't like not in a negative way, but we went kind of, you know, trench deep. And the whole thing was, and he was honestly pursuing the question, you know, he was a questionnaire. There was this big questionnaire going on for all of us, and it was, how do you divide the subjectivity of morals and the objectivity of morals? And that actually broke, and this is just a paradigm. It's not like a universal truth. It's just a paradigm to comprehend. I actually, for my own sake, I know we're getting close to our end here, but I go through three things, and it's supposed to be taken with a grain of salt. It's hypothetical. For me, it works a lot. I mean, it's tremendous to my actual point of view, my worldview, a belief. But I designed it this way to be neutral for others. Okay, so I'll get to the chase. Okay, so we talked about this earlier with Sherry. I said, you know, across the board, no matter what dogmatic creed, atheist, Muslim, whatever, spiritual, religious, non-religious, agnostic, most people agree firstly in consent. That is to say, well, I have my own body. I have the right to drink, right? And as long as I don't hurt anybody else while I'm drinking, it's okay. If I want to walk across the street, that's my consent. If two of us want to have sex, you know, if I have a partner who wants to have sex with me, then you know, it's consent, then yes, you know. But then we get into the second degree. This is where it becomes the immoral. And that is that it's not so much a bad thing, but that we have pathological conditions. If I choose to be with a person who is abusive, I might have consent and they might have consent, but it might be wrong because I am used to being the victim. So I attract a predator and they abuse me. Okay. If I drink too much and become an alcoholic, I might be prudent enough to conceal myself against other, you know, a company. But at the same time, if I drink too much, it's going to be, you know, counterproductive to my health. I could die of liver disease and all that kind of stuff. So we have the first cause is consent. Across the board, everyone agrees with consent. It's my business. Let me do with what I do. If I take anything figuratively that's not mine, it's wrong. That is material theft, rape, murder, etc. If it's not of my belonging, of character, nature, being, then it's wrong. It's immoral. Everyone across the board agrees with that. Except for sociopaths who believe that they can, you know, survival of the fittest. Bullies get to do whatever they want. They're sociopaths. They're very rare. But there's an abundance of those too.
Well,
you know?
They're not rare. They're in government and they're in the corporate world.
right. That's good. But you
I wanted
know,
to
that's,
tell you also,
they're
Jason.
They're out there.
I wanted to tell you also, Jason. There's nobody on after us. We don't have to stop if you don't want to. We can continue.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna cut it short here pretty quick, and I want to say this final thought, and I would love to hear your feedback, and we might keep going. You know. I'm the type of person who, when I chime in and someone chimes in with me, I can keep going for a long time. Uh-huh. I mean, right. I'm a Gemini, so I gab away, you know? so my thing is this, is that, you know, the third one though is controversial. Okay. So I'm going to rehash this. It's, first is most people across the board of the entire earth will agree that consent is everything. And there's lots of parables throughout all sorts of philosophies. No two people walk together unless there's an agreement. Right. And it's just a figure of speech. It means, you know, if we agree, if we're walking happily together, there's an agreement. You know, if you're forced to walk together, that's obviously an exception. But the concept is that my body, my rights, your body, your rights, if I offend them, if it's your possession, your donkey, if I steal your donkey, if I steal your property, your TV, if I even verbally speak out of turn and, you know, disrespect you. These are rights, you know. So consent is the first thing that everyone agrees on. The second one is the pathological, where even though we have consent, we might have disorder. Whereas to say, you know, if I drink too much, I get sick, you know, it becomes unhealthy for me and potentially other people. If, you know, I want to be rich, but I become an egotistical maniac, you know, it's very self-destructive. So what those two do in the paradigm, this abstract paradigm, it shows crossing the lines between what we all, you know, a neutral agreement across the board, regardless of dogma, that we have the right to our own being. But even though we have the right to our own being, the other side of the tracks here is that even though we have the free will to do what we want with ourselves and those who have consent with us, it might be unhealthy. Okay. Those are the two thresholds that most people agree upon. Okay. And sometimes people are naive or in denial. So they say, oh, let's just keep drinking and then someone dies of alcohol poisoning. Or let's have all sorts of orgies and all of a sudden someone gets offended because they really love somebody else. These are real things that are the common thread of moral agreement. The third is controversial because the third attempts to approach, there are possibly, hypothetically, higher spiritual laws objective. This is where we all go full circle. The subjective universe versus the objective universe. Are there higher laws that say that? And then we have the law of grace. So like this benevolent source is forgiving, but you know, are there things that do cause consequences? It's not judgment. It's not like, you know, like you're condemned, but like there are natural consequences.
I think there is, you know, expanding a little bit on that. I thought for many, many years, well, let's just take drinking and smoking. They are horrible vices. They're the blight on America.
Right.
Along with gambling and porn addiction, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They are the blight on the world. Excuse me a second here. I had to burp. But, you know.
Good food. That means you had some good food. That's good to know.
Yeah. So, as Americans, we've known at least since the late 70s, that the tobacco industry has lied well back, you know, from the turn of the 20th century all the way up until the late 70s.
Right.
They lied about cigarettes. They lied about alcohol. the alcohol industry has too. We know these things cause cancers and they cause illness. They cause liver disease. They cause kidney disease. They cause all this stuff. And people have known this for almost 50 years now. Almost 40 years now, probably, from what I can remember. At least the last 40 years, people have known this, but people are still choosing to do these destructive habits. And, you know, am I the bad guy for not being able to muster up any kind of sympathy for that? Am I supposed to be the bad? Am I supposed to feel sorry for them?
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, another part of grace is I can give you my grace for so long until I got to say, you know, sayonara, bub, but, you know, you burnt your bridges. And we all know the story. We've all had friends. We've experienced, We've all had experiences where, let me turn that off. I have been on both sides. That's my only favorite trait of myself as a judge of my own perspectives is I have been one of the most egotistical maniacs while at the same time being very humble, when I'm graced by that. And, you're not a bad guy because that's the thing. It's like, you know, I actually have sympathy because of what I've gone through. And it's the first time I spoke out loud. I have seen priests and common people have attraction to young people. And even Sherry mentioned it. She said, you know, she'll even flirt with young kids. But there's a fine line between playing and not playing. And I want to use a great example for those who may be judgmental on that. I've seen a lot of, and I'm not stereotyping because men do it too, but one thing I've seen mostly in my limited experience is that women are flattered by young pubescent teenagers because, you know, it reminds them of their childhood, you know, and so they'll flirt back, but they flirt with very severe boundaries, you know, and then some people actually like teachers are have a bad stigma, a bad reputation for giving into it, you know, on a level they should not. But the thing is, though, is that
they didn't give into that when I was a kid.
They did not?
No.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's the culture we're entering, right? But I want to answer your thought real quick, though, because I'm going through a long-winded explanation where I usually lose myself, you know. But it's like, you know, I actually agree with you. You know, if I have moments of like, I have a niece, right? I think she's beautiful and amazing. You know, I love her as my niece. You know, my sister's very attractive. You know, well, I get that crud a lot from people. They're like, oh yeah, you know, your sister's so hot, and then, you know, amongst my friends, they tease me, you know. In the way that men would tease each other. And I'm like, man, I'll be the first one to admit that she's really hot, you know, but she's just my sister. And the thing is that, you know, when another guy's giving me crap, you know, I have to just take the pill and just be like, yeah, man, it's cool. You know, I have a couple of friends where their sisters are hot and I give them crap too. But my niece, I had to tease her the other day and I had to say, like, you know, watch out for those boys because you're now 13 years old and pubescence is going to hit and they're going to be all over you, you know? And the thing is that, for those who give in to stupidity, yeah, I have no remorse, you know. Like, I do have some compassion because I know a difference between a disorder. I got a story for you real quick. This is just some abstract thing again. One of my friends attempted to go to become a dentist and a dentist assistant, I think. And so when he's going to school, one of the things that he learned about was there's a tooth infection that can reach into your brain and cause you to behave like a child. I was having a discussion at work. This is another one. Okay. So that gives an example right there before I jump on, is that there's a condition with your teeth infection. If you have a tooth infection or your teeth are infected, you start to think like a child. I didn't know they existed.
I think there must be 200 million people here in America that have that. Yeah.
So at work, I had the same thing going on. And this is one that you might attribute to as well. And you have some thoughts. And that is this, is that I was at work. And so I was having a discussion with a very ultra religious person who's a very good friend of mine. And we have our disagreements as well. And I was talking about, and I was very nervous and insecure at the moment, but we only have two genders, you know, male, female, and to the exception, which is still, you know, the exception proves the rule, We have, with all due respect, we have mixed genders that do occur, and they're just as beautiful as anybody else. But we only have two genders, you know, to the exception. So when people talk about, oh, there's like, you know, 15 different genders, no, those are identities. Those are sexual, you know, those are whatever you call them, identities.
You know, right? It used to be up until 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
That if you were born male, but you've always felt that you were a female, well, you know what? They've got operations. They can change you. They can change you into a female. I've had two people on the show. One was born male and turned herself into a female with the operation, and vice versa. One was born female and turned himself into a male with the operation. They got all the hormones. They got all the counseling. They went through the process and they had the operation. So you know, yeah, they are physically male and female today.
Yeah, trend. And, that's called transgender, correct?
I don't think so. I don't know what the term is. Maybe Lori knows. She's.
I don't want to offend anybody else. Yeah, by listening, you know, who's listening to this, and if I get any term incorrectly, I do apologize. But
I don't really care about all this misgendering and stuff like that. That's nothing but distraction and baloney. There's an agenda behind that. But you know, yeah, if you're born one, but you feel you're the other, get the operation.
My point was this though, is that there was science that was proven though that there is actually different brain chemistry solutions, you know, chemical situations, not imbalances. Don't do that. I believe in genetics on all different terms. And this woman came up, so this is why he disagreed with me, because he was religious. I said, there's two different genders. He agreed to that because of his conventional religious point of views. And I said, but there's this woman who is a leading professional in brain chemistry and gut chemistry and all the different, you know, genetics. And she, in her laboratory, at her university, all her people, they had concluded there was about 15 different levels of identity, emotional connection. So once again, there's a professional comedian, again, I won't mention a name, but he's a top leading professional comedian in America. And he does, I think, even international tours, but he sounds very homosexual, but he's not. He's got a wife. I don't believe for a second he's in the closet. He just talks that way. He just mannerisms himself that way. No judgment. It's just, that's who he is. And this professional, she didn't mention him at all, but she talked about how it had nothing to do with, you know, there's only two. She acknowledged the fact there's only two genders, but to the exception, what people don't realize who are very judgmental is that there are varying levels of brain chemistry that cause, like, a man can have, I don't know if it's estrogen per se, but a man can be very feminine, but still strongly prefer women, and he's straight. Women can be very butch and very appearing to be homosexual, but she still prefers men. And there was like 15 different reasons why a certain chemistry would build up in their whole system to be as they were, whether it's, you know, your traditional male, straight woman, traditional straight, or someone who acts like the opposite sex, but they're still straight. And then they get a plethora of other things, you know, including pansexual. So, and these are chemistry things that have nothing to do with right or wrong. See, this is why I go back to the subjective, because it's like, I believe in objective morals to a point, but I think most of us that we agreed last time, a long time ago, this is like a couple of years ago when we did the show, we agreed, all of us agreed in the panels, the panelists, that most of it comes down, whether there's a grace, whether there's a right or wrong, black and white, night and day, I think universe says, just be good. Like you referenced Sherry, you know, like do good unto others as you would have them do unto you, and the golden rule and all that kind of stuff. All that matters is that, you know, we show respect, because universe doesn't judge your situation other than your kindness or your cruelty. Correct. You know, that's just how I feel about it.
But yeah. But the system would never allow that though, because the system has stereotypical attributes.
Yeah. And that's a problem, you know, cause I have one friend who is on Facebook, and I don't know her for nothing in real life. And she talks more of the conservative, and I agree with a lot of the stuff she says, because she doesn't. I actually approached her last night, and I was wrong. I thought she was saying something negative when she wasn't. She was just showing a neutral situation of agreement. but because it was so neutral, it sounded negative. I misinterpreted it. And she's been persuading me because she's been an excellent teacher. She's a conservative. At first I thought she was being, politically incorrect and talking negative. But it turns out what she was doing is she was actually attacking the liberal extremism where, that's a problem, right? So we have the liberal extremism where it's like, everyone can use any bathroom they want. Well, I don't, those types of things. I'm not going to say what I don't know much about it. She's very educational. She's talking about these extremisms of, you have the right to walk in and burn a flag inside a building. It's like, well, no, you don't. You can burn a flag by your freedoms outside or maybe in public. I don't know the laws, but you can't burn it's like smoking inside a building. You don't have the right to walk into a building and smoke if they have anti-smoking rules. That's their establishment. You can't just do what you want. And so she's going on this crusade against, this extreme liberalism. And that I agree with, and she taught me a lot. So, when it comes to these universal, where do we define the line between universal right and wrong? You just mentioned the establishment won't let it happen. Do you think that maybe they want this liberalism, this extreme liberalism to happen to confuse us even more?
Sure. The establishment here in America, the media has been moving toward a secularism, a collectivism for many, many decades, close to 100 years.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Close to 100 years they've been moving towards secularism.
Okay, wow. So Sherry mentioned how some white class or something has been targeted between 18 and 29. What are your thoughts on your own perspective of demographics on that one? I mean, I think we've all been targeted, but what is the number one demographic you think has been targeted?
I think it is the younger generation.
Yeah.
Mainly because since the mid to late 80s, the vaccination for children has quadrupled. By the time I reached the age of 18, I think I had maybe a dozen vaccinations. Now, by the time, this is 2019, a kid that was born in 2001, they actually have had 164 vaccinations in their life the first 18 years.
Wow, that's insane.
And I believe that has a lot, that has a lot to do with the psychological impact on a young mind. They have directly correlated vaccinations with autism and a lot of the other autism spectrums. I don't know what they all are, but there's a direct correlation. There is also Barack Obama tried to introduce, and I don't really know whether it got introduced or not, but his medical czar, Cass Sunstein, he tried to get legislation introduced to where anyone that has so-called, quote, mental illness won't be able to buy a weapon to protect themselves with. And they also won't be able to buy they won't be able to get a visa or a passport, whatever you want to call it, to fly out of the country. They won't be able to do a lot of things. So look at all these people that are in their teens, late teens, 20s and 30s that, have this autism spectrum. There's millions of them now because I think 25, 30 years ago, the autism rate was 1 in 25,000 or 1 in 30,000, something like that. And now the rate is 1 in 56. One child in 56 gets autism now. What's that going to be if the vaccinations go up in the coming years? You get more and more and more. What's that rate going to be in 5 years? Is it going to be 1 in 10? 1 in 5?
Yeah, right. No, exactly. And that's what's frightening to me is that, again, I know this agenda's out there. Bill Burr, I don't know what your opinions are on him, but Bill Burr made some funny jokes about it. He's like, we do know for a fact these summits happen, these private cultish summits happen between these world leaders. He made this joke. He's like, there's got to be at least, so this is just a comedy and a comedian I'm repeating, but he makes it funny. He's like, you're going to tell me there's nobody out there talking about the population of the world. There's got to be at least one Illuminati scumbag. We're all talking about the good stuff. Let's, what about the population? We got to attack the population because they're getting too big, too large. What's the next volcano attack we're going to plan to eliminate half the world? And I think it's real. He's a comedian playing on something he knows is truth because he is a conspiracy theorist. And, you know, and he plays it smart. He plays it neutral, you know, but it's like, you know, it's out there. Man. I mean, these people are planning that kind of stuff, you know.
I do know two things are facts.
Okay.
They are written in memoirs and books and stuff like that. John Lennon, up until the day he died, or within a few months, you know, there's an interview before he was shot and killed in 1980. He was a big advocate for the depopulation group. You know, we had too many people. We gotta cut down on people. We're gonna lose resources. Yada yada yada. You know the mantra.
You're right.
And then he learned what the truth is.
Before he got assassinated, he wrote that to someone or publicized it in one way or another. I think it was a letter, right?
He was in an interview.
It was in the right.
It's on YouTube, yeah. And he was shot. He was one of the big advocates for the agenda. And all of a sudden, he learned about what the truth was, and bang, he gets a bullet in the head.
Wow. That's what I'm talking about. Also, you know? It's like, I want to say this, you know, like again, I said last episode that I was on. That was like two episodes ago, three episodes, I don't know. But, you know, I'm such a novice who doesn't do his research, and I'm offended with myself.
Well, the other one and is...
Go ahead.
Don't need to be offended by yourself, but, you know, there's so much knowledge out there. There's so much knowledge out there. You'll be 85 years old, and you'll still be learning stuff, but...
That's true.
Anyways, Malcolm X was the same way. He was a black militant. He was part of the... Black Panthers, I believe. And he was all about fighting the system and fighting the white man, fighting the police. And then one day he told somebody in his inner circle, he said, I'm going to reach out to the white leaders and start to talk to them, try to work things out.
Mm-hmm.
And bam, he got a bullet in his head.
Wow. Now, that wasn't the Buffalo Soldiers, was it?
I don't think so.
Okay, that was way before or way after. Yeah. Interesting. Yes, that's what strikes me so much is just how much, no matter how much, see, I play the benefit of the doubt card, and because I've seen coincidence happen, you know, and sure, it's a collective consciousness still manifesting, but the more I see these types of evidences, you know, undoubtedly it's real, and it's very disturbing. And again, so my philosophy is I believe in the benevolent universe, you know. So I believe that for a time of free will that is, you know, can last eons, you know, we're talking about more than just the human flesh, you know, we're talking about spirit beyond the flesh. These wars are just as much galactic as they are, or supernatural or ethereal, as they are, you know, physical.
Yep.
And so, you know, I actually believe an outcome. My own personal thoughts is I do believe a hell that's temporary. I don't believe in everlasting hell, but I do believe that there is a place that where if you misconstrue your energy and you choose the dark side deliberately, because, you know, the number one thing that most of these religions talk about, again, like you said, it's not the religion institutions, but the wise men, the wise women who constructed their connectivity to these sources to truth. And then people built religion, institutional religions around them. So, you know, there's this collective agreement amongst these masters that talk about, yeah, it's a self-inflicted hell because the universe doesn't want to send anyone into punishment. And there's all sorts of different ways to look at this because, like, for example, we have natural chaos in the universe, you know. So chaos is relative because just because there's volcanoes and storms and stuff, that doesn't mean that they're bad things. I mean, that's part of nature. And for the flesh, you know, animal or man, and man's just another form of animal, you know, it's just like, you know, yeah, it's going to destroy the body. But at the same time, I believe there's more to the story than what obviously people think about. And these are tough questions, but I believe that the universe is benevolent. And I think that some hell will manifest to people who choose that for themselves. And, you know, they'll be their temporary purgatory until they get out, until they pay every last penny, as Jesus said. I am a mystic Christian. That means I believe in all religions because it's not about religion, it's about law. And that's a whole other, you know, wormhole to go down. But, you know, if there's any kind of spiritual phenomena of existentialism in reality, then to me, there is this yin and yang of, you know, first the Godhead is benevolent. What we do for ourselves is, you know, good versus bad, and we reap our rewards of good over bad and the consequences or the reward thereof. But God is gracious because most time, there's all these figures of speech, people accidentally do bad things under the attempt of doing good things. You know, like the road to hell is paved in good intentions is one of them, figures of speech. But, you know, it's like a lot of people do good things out of vanity, you know. So people who do good things out of vanity often are in the same loophole or the same grouping as, you know, people who are deliberately or incident, you know, they're the same number of people who do bad things on purpose, you know. And so, like, there's a lot of different stuff. There's a lot of different circumstances, but it's very simple. It's like what your intention is matters the most. And so when we talk about subjective and objective laws, I think that there's a lot of subjectivity in terms of self-manifestation, and we're under the law of grace for whatever purpose. Like, God is grace. I don't care about religious Christian or Jew or Muslim or the Abrahamic faiths or Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism or Taoism. I care less. But I know that grace is a part of universe. So a lot of people will accidentally do bad, great bad. I mean, if I accidentally react to the wrong circumstances, there will be people murdered and raped and butchered. But because my intentions were incidental, I might have to endure some karma of their suffering, but God still smiles upon me because it was an accident. But if I deliberately become a bad guy and start raping and murdering people, then yeah, there's a lot of hellfire to pay for, you know? Uh-huh. There's a big difference there. You know what I mean? There's a big difference there between like deliberate and incidental.
Laurie in the chat looked it up. Buffalo soldiers were originally members of the 10th Cavalry Regiment of the United States Army.
That's a Civil War time, wasn't it?
Yeah, the late 1800s.
Wow. Way to go. Good research. Thank you. Awesome.
Late Revolutionary War period.
Wow. Yeah, but you know, and so you really have done some research, and you think it goes all the way back to even, I mean, obviously way before. I mean, you said 6,000 years. What do you think? And I'm going to let you go after this. I got to go too. I got to still clean my house. My mom's coming home here pretty soon, and I got to make sure the house is clean for her. That's fun news to share online with all sorts of viewers. But so the thing is that you believe this has been going on for roughly 6,000 years. You mentioned several times. What do you think the origin of mankind's consciousness for sophisticated living is? You know, like, when have we become more advanced? And do you believe in anything spiritual? Do you have any theories or philosophies around our origin?
Well, you know, previous to the controlled government, the governmental structure of 6,000 years ago, people did live nomadic lives. You know, they lived in small tribes. They fought with each other, but they were less controlled. The control system wasn't as sophisticated as what it has been since the last 6,000 years. People worshipped the sun, they worshipped the moon, they worshipped Saturn, Venus, all the planets. They worshipped, they sacrificed children to volcanoes in this last 6,000 years. The control mechanism has been there for 6,000 years, but I think people were probably better off before this. People probably were more skeptical and more leery of, you know, I don't believe for one second that anybody has special blood. Royal blood.
Yeah, special. I don't either. I don't buy into that. You know, the whole Holy Grail thing. Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's just one example. But yeah, I don't believe in any of that kind of stuff either.
Uh-huh. I believe Jesus was an anarchist.
I love it too, because actually I'm big into Edgar Cayce, and I turned Sherry onto that. And, you know, I don't know what her views are to this day on Cayce, but in the Cayce readings, and of course, they're not perfect. They're just another human source of channeled information. But I believe in them to like 99% accuracy level, or like, you know, 95% or whatever you want to say. But he talked about that. And did it again.
Well, while you're thinking there, I wanted to tell you one other thing.
Okay, cool.
I think Laurie also researched it in the chat there that propaganda held Malcolm X in those Buffalo Soldier type of characterizations.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. I can dig that, because that's a thing where, okay, yeah, Malcolm X, you know, wow. I mean, yeah, it's a false representation because, from what I know, allegedly, that's true history. But I mean, like, the Buffalo Soldiers were so skilled at what they could do in Brotherhood that they got their own regiment, where it was unheard of back in that day, you know, revolutionary times. And the fact that they held they're a completely black regiment of soldiers. And given their own militia type ability to go and do whatever they had to do for their government, for the government there at the time, and the revolution. And so the fact that Malcolm X exemplified a lot of procedure after them, you know, or tried to mimic them or utilize them as a reference for themselves, you know, I'm not very sure. I don't have a very mature understanding of, Malcolm X and what happened with him. I think that he was more for violence, though, to get the point across, wasn't he?
He was, until he changed his mind, and then they shot him.
Once again, he changes his mind. Someone innocent gets shot for being converted to goodness, a better side of themselves.
No, he got shot in the head because he was all about fighting the system, fighting the corporation, fighting the government.
That's what I'm saying. A physical fight. So like I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then when he told one of his friends, I want to start talking to these people and trying to work things out, that's when they shot. And also both Kennedys, John and, Bobby.
Yeah.
John Kennedy did fire Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA. He was going to split the CIA into 1,000 pieces or just disintegrate them totally. He was having nothing to do with the war in Vietnam. He wanted all troops pulled back to America. He was about ending the Federal Reserve, ending the usury system. He had sanctioned $5 billion in U.S. currency backed by gold and silver. Those aren't in circulation anymore because people collect them. But still, they're backed by gold and silver. He sanctioned $5 billion of it. He was going to drain the swamp before Donald Trump ever even thought of the term.
Yeah.
And they put a bullet in his head.
Yeah, it's tragic. How many people see, and that's the thing that worries me. And I think that's why I have a great deal of gratitude for Sherry always being so gung-ho about it, and yourself too, is that it's real, it's there, it's good for people to be enlightened about it. And I do believe there have been different times in history where there has been actual different countries. I know there's a lot of listeners across the globe, but like different countries in Europe and in Asia, Asia, they actually manifested their peace. There was kingdoms that were more righteous than controlled by the superficial forces of corruption. And I believe wholeheartedly, without a doubt, yes, there's going to be conflict and struggle, but I know that there's going to be times of rejuvenated hope of transparency. And that transparency is just up in the air. What are we going to do with it? I don't know. I went to Edgar Casey a minute there and then lost my train of thought again. I do that where I lose it for a minute. Again, I am a schizophrenic and I'm sick and I'm trying to work on that. But I was going to say that, you know, as far as the origin, Edgar Casey doesn't believe in he goes into deep readings about how there's no bloodline. But Edgar Casey also prophesies holy bloodline. But Edgar Casey also goes into the fact that there is a revolution coming because it is, once again, the yin and yang balancing out. So corruption has won for so long. Now, according to Edgar Casey's timeline and other mystics, of course, like you have some that are more ancient and considered hypothetical fiction works, like Homer's Gilead? Homer's work, Gilead? What do you call it?
I'm trying to think of it too. Iliad and the something.
Yeah, you know, and that was I talked about Atlantis and stuff like that. Well, Edgar Casey goes into all of that himself. He believes that our timeline of existence, and here's the thing, there's actually duality of evidence that prove that our timeline that we've been told is real, but there's also evidence, like actual archaeological evidence and carbon dating evidence, that it actually isn't at all.
Homer's Iliad and the Odyssey.
And the Odyssey, yes. Yeah. And then so, yeah. So anyway, what happens is that you know, there might be so much more to our history than just the past 6,000 years. Maybe the last 6,000 years have been when they took control and they actually manipulated the prehistory to their benefit to trick us. There's a very good I recommend this for a lot of people. There's a good, it's not animated. They just use filters on the camera. It's live action. There's a little bit of animation. What is that show called? That's so funny. It's a philosophical show. It's great. And what it is, there it is. Greece, Homer, Iliad. Yes.
Sorry about that.
That's great. There's a show, Waking Life. If y'all can watch Waking Life, it's hilarious because it's a great philosophical show. It goes back and forth. It's more psychology than anything else, so you don't have to worry about spirituality, this or that. It's psychological and philosophy, but it's great because I don't want to give any spoilers because it's really, really, really intriguing and it has lots of twists and turns. But it's more of a hype. It's more of a biopical documentary. And so, anyway, there's one segment I have to mention. The guy says, as a hypothesis, it's just fiction, but it's fun because what if, you never know. He says, what if, you know, Jesus was real and all that Armageddon stuff was real, but we've been deceived by the Illuminati cabal that it just happened like 100 years ago. And we've always been in this technological Atlantean reality. And, you know, they just dumbed it down for us. You know, like once some martyrs died and they won their hour of darkness, they just dumbed down the technology. And now it's like Armageddon's already here. We just don't even realize it. Like, what if it wasn't 2,000 years ago? And I guess it's just an example. But what if, like, that shit, that kind of stuff is real?
Well,
and, you know, it was just like 100 years ago, you know, and we're already in Armageddon. And it's just this big veil pulled over our eyes, you know? Uh-huh.
You know, there are, you know, people take mythology as fiction. But
right.
Who's to say it's actually true?
Yeah, not true. Right. Who's to say it's not true?
Not true.
It's probably more truth to it than we realize.
No, and Greek mythology and other societies, Nordic, Viking, a lot of other societies, take back in biblical times, people were in so many terms or characterized, you know, they were able to transcend up to heaven. Who's to say they didn't master physics or something and they could actually disappear or float or perform miracles.
Yeah, the whole Celestine prophecy was based on that concept too as well, because it's just it's a fiction book, you know, written and then they made a movie out of it. But it's the same thing. You know, it's like they're more consciousness than dimension. But if you reach the consciousness well enough, you actually manifest a dimension that is universal for anyone to be a part of because it's collective. And if you're not familiar with it, it's interesting because the story goes, there's a man, and it's been so long since I've seen it. I never read the book. I watched the movie. But there was the thing is, this woman goes and she disappears. The man goes looking for her or looking for somebody. And the gist is, if you come from a place of love, you can manifest yourself into heaven, even on this planet. Like, it's not a separate world. It's just a separate dimension if you're incarnated in this world. And so the world is like multi-levels of dimensions. You can manifest yourself into hell if you go too dark in your thinking. You can manifest yourself into heaven, but the world itself is, and it's just, you know, abstract again, but it's like the world itself is more of a neutral land of choice. Some would consider it purgatory according to this theme. It's different interpretations. It's a fictitious story. But I believe in that kind of concept because I do believe that people have manifested, as you suggested, that consciousness where they did master physics, because I think of oneness 24/7. Everything's oneness. If it's the soul, which is the higher power, is the spirit soul, And then from that spirit soul thing, it goes down to the mind, to the body, to the corporal. So we have one, the highest force is ethereal, and I'm generalizing because different people have different interpretations, but the highest forces are ethereal purely, interpretively so. And then we go into more of the mental state and then more of the physical, corporal materialism of the world. And so, yeah, I believe that if you manifest, like, let's say, a consciousness of enlightenment, that's going to be transcendent through your body. So a lot of people, you know, they believe in that kind of stuff, but we want evidences. Other people don't want evidences as much. They don't need them. But, you know, I have seen things in my life that make me a believer. I mean, no doubt.
Yeah,
I 100% agree with all of that.
I hear you.
All right, buddy, I'm going to go ahead and take off. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that you and I got the chance to talk, you know, solo here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always a joy to be on the show. I love Sherry and the different guests and the panelists who've been on before. But it's been quality time, man. I mean, I'm glad that we had this moment.
Yeah, me too. I've enjoyed it. We actually did about an hour and 45 minutes, somewhere in there.
Yes. Awesome, man. All right. So it's been a pleasure, y'all, and y'all have a good night.
All right. You too, Jason. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, everyone. We did quite a show, me and Jason and Sherry and Jason. So for Sherry and Jason, good night, everyone.